Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C, this is Agriculture Today.
Sorghum ending stocks were left unchanged at 52 million metric tons. For the whole sorghum complex, numbers were basically left unchanged. Exports at 100 million bushels, total domestic use at 225, feed and consumption, food, seed, and industrial consumption at 70, with feed and residual steady at 155. Noted, I think the last month they did raise that feed and residual number up a bit for grain sorghum.
Dr. Guy Allen is with the IGP Institute.
Without China there in the market, basis for sorghum is pretty cheap, and we're seeing that price into the feed rations, not only in the U.S., but we've seen Mexico buy a little bit of grain sorghum as well as it's pricing the feed rations south of the border there for us.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
We lost 90,000 plants and factories from the beginning of NAFTA, the worst trade deal ever made in the history of this world.
President Donald Trump on NAFTA and trade.
But certainly in the history of trade, there's never been a worse trade deal. We were able to cancel that. We had to get approval from Congress. It was like a disastrous curse. Because you had to go to Congress to get it terminated. You couldn't just terminate it because it was a bad deal. And you had people in Congress that didn't want to do it because they had other reasons, maybe bad reasons. They're mostly not there anymore, those people. But it's amazing what's happened. I appreciate that question because it's incredible. I don't think we've ever seen anything like it. $7 trillion, and it's much more than that because, you know, these are places that we know. $7 trillion is unheard of. I never looked at the Biden numbers, but you could go a whole year, and it was peanuts. Everybody was leaving. They weren't coming in. They were leaving, and that means jobs are leaving. And so we're not playing games. We're going to make this country greater than ever before.
And as part of trade, the Panama Canal. Pete Hegseth is the Secretary of Defense.
We just got back from Panama last night. We were at the Panama Canal with their SOFCOM commander ships, F-18s, troops, and signed a couple of historic deals. One which is with the Panama Canal Authority, a framework for U.S. vessels first and free through the Panama Canal. Right. And then also a memorandum of understanding with their security minister for the presence of U.S. troops. Fort Sherman is an old U.S. base there, as well as their naval station and air station, jointly with Panama, to secure the Panama Canal from Chinese influence. That's something you said, we're taking back the canal. China said too much influence. Obama and others let them creep in. We, along with Panama, are pushing them out, sir. And so we had a very successful trip there. President Molino sends his regards, very complimentary of the U.S. as he's a great ally, and I think they want the communist Chinese out. And with our troops there partnering with their forces, we've got a chance to push them all the way out, sir.
And it really ties all back into banking. Ruben Gallego, senator from Arizona.
And there needs to be a reminder that banking plays a very important role in stabilization of this country when it comes to, you know, wealth generation. You know, there's not, if you want to see what a good predictor of poverty in this country is, ask somebody if they have a bank account or not, right? I can tell you my family, especially my immigrant family, those that were doing well had bank accounts. Those that didn't, were poor. Right. I mean, step one right there. Step two, you know, banking, especially commercial banking, is sometimes the only real information someone gets about, you know, financial opportunities. Right. You know, I learned about, you know, CDs, stock markets, and everything else like that by going into my local, doesn't exist anymore, Home and Bank on the south side of Chicago and seeing rates up. Right. And, you know, I would ask the banker, like, what is that? And he would explain to me what a CD is. And then I would see something about stock markets. And he explained to me what a stock market is. Like, this is the stuff that as a four-year-old, I wasn't getting fourth grade, whoa, that would have been genius. as someone in fourth grade, you know, I never would have had that opportunity. My family, it still isn't invested in the markets at all. Maybe that might be okay today. But... you know, like there is a role that these banks play in our lives every day, and they're very much a stabilizer in our communities. And, you know, they bring value, especially if you're someone that's more on the social progressive side. Banks can bring huge value to that, especially when we're trying to equalize the inequities that comes from, you know, the market systems that are out there right now.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
One of the reasons I'm sort of stressed out of my mind right now is more than the chaos you see in some of the financial markets trying to understand the tariff issues and our leverage on other countries and their leverage, what's going on there.
Arizona Representative David Schweikert.
I don't think we're spending enough time talking about our own work. Last Friday, actually it may have been Saturday morning, the Senate passed their version of reconciliation budget, but completely unserious document. They basically, and I'm going to show over and over and over and over here, they took a pass on doing what was difficult. And if this is a negotiation between the House and the Senate, if you've ever bought a car or been in a negotiation, when one side gives you a completely unserious offer, you often have to walk away until they get serious. Because there's real things going on in the world. Here's an article from the other day, and I have a small stack of these, talking about bond markets and debt markets and others starting to unload U.S. debt. Today, if you're a geek and we're watching the 10-year bond, at one moment, I was watching in over about an hour or so period of time, I saw the 10-year bond move by about 20 basis points. Now, in geek speak, that's a big deal. Apparently, it's been like 5 years. And think about some of the crazy things that were going on 5 years ago to see that sort of movement. We're stressing the crap out of the markets. And the fact of the matter, why that's important, this country borrows about $60,000-$70,000 every second. We borrow, that becomes what, $250 million every hour. Last year, for every dollar we took in tax receipts, we spent $1.39. The reality of it here is when 39 cents out of every dollar you're borrowing, for the $5 trillion we're going to take in tax receipts, we're going to spend like $7.2 trillion. Maybe you don't screw with your bankers. And the reality of it is your savings, this government's bond fund, the family on the other side of the world that has savings, that's the money that buys our debt. And the Ray Dalio, you know, Bridgewater founder, has been doing these articles saying, you got a problem. And the basis of the problem is there's not enough capital in the world to deal with the binging of debt coming from the United States, coming from China, now starting to come from Europe. Now you saw that Germany looks like they're going to be lifting their debt caps. When we borrow, we're also competing with other countries in the world. United States, I think, is now maybe 13, maybe number 12 on the credit stack. Think of this. I believe Greece can sell a 10-year bond cheaper than the United States. That's worth thinking about. So let's actually walk through what's going on right now with the reconciliation budgets. And let's sort of explain, why do we do the reconciliation budgets? 1974 Budget Control Act created this mechanism that if you're going to cut spending, and it gives you one of the few times in life where you can actually work on mandatory spending, the things that are on autopilot, because for most members of Congress, in their entire career, everything they vote on is borrowed money. When we vote on defense, when we vote on non-defense discretionary, the things we do get to vote on, it's all borrowed, every dime of it. And last year, about $300-400 billion of mandatory earned benefits, those things, were on borrowed money.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
Oil seeds was a bit neutral. It tended to follow corn today. It was up higher. It was up 10 to 15 cents, actually, on Thursday's close.
Guy Allen is with the IGP Institute at Kansas State, recapping some of the latest numbers from the World Ag Supply Demand Estimates and looking at the corn to bean ratio.
Carry out was down about 5 million bushels compared to last month at 375 million, just 4 million less than the trade average, so came in about where expected. Imports increased 5 to 25 million metric tons. Crush was higher, which that led a little bit of a support. No change in the average producer price. The USDA is putting out at $9.95 a bushel. Ending stocks for soybean oil were forecast to be about 80 million pounds, a bit smaller than the trade had anticipated. Biofuel use was decreased, though, about 200 million pounds. Food use was also a little lower, which was a bit bearish on the oilseed situation. A little more optimistic on the meal side. That tended to fall corn a bit higher. So a bit mixed there in the soybean situation, but it did fall corn a bit higher today. And looking at that corn to bean ratio at the moment as we're going into planting, definitely favors corn. Soybeans are going to have to compete to buy a bit acres, so it'll be interesting to see what our planting situation is there.
One area that Alan watches closely, freight and transportation.
A little bit of interesting news there on the whole freight situation. Dry bulk freight index was weaker this week. It came in at on Thursday at 1,260, which is that weakness is coming in the wake of these trade issues there as well, as they expect a little less bulk, dry bulk commodities to be moving in that. Probably the biggest news in the freight, and I'd put this issue as actually bigger than the tariff issues, is there's been a 301 investigation regarding Chinese vessels visiting U.S. ports and putting a tax on that. That's been in discussion for well over 5-6 years now, and it is a very much a bipartisan issue. And they were going to put somewhere between $500,000 to $1.5 million tax on every Chinese owned or built vessel every time it made a port call in the U.S. Been a lot of discussion on that. The federal government has decided to push that forward. They did not make a decision on that in recent executive orders. It's still a concern how they're going to address that. Still not sure. But I think that was a very good decision because that sort of had the potential to really have a very distorting or negative impact on the whole transportation sector. And for dry bulk commodities like corn, grain, wheat, all our dry bulk commodities, and even our other commodities, predominantly moved on Chinese-owned vessels, had a potential for a very big impact on that. So I was very happy to see that push forward.
And sure, there's volatility in markets, but what about the volatility in the dollar? The
dollar's had a very volatile ride this week in the wake of geopolitical issues and trade issues and announcements. We've seen that drop down to about 101.3 on the index. Just 2 weeks ago, we were up at 104. So, and it's traded in a very, very wide range. And that's coming in at about a 6-month low going back to October. But nothing real surprising there, just a lot of volatility.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
So, you know, this is kind of one of those monthly pieces of information that we get, and I've been watching this pretty closely here because these prices have definitely been showing signs of trending higher as far as retail beef and pork prices go.
Tyler Cousins, director of the Livestock Marketing Information Center on retail meat prices.
And so by and large, across the board, consumers are seeing those higher retail prices in the meat case there. So definitely something that we're watching. And so specifically to talk about a few of these prices on the beef side, the all-fresh retail beef price, it actually reached a new record of $8.42 per pound in March. That's actually up 6, almost 7%, over 50 cents per pound from the prior year. And I think kind of the noteworthy things to pull out from that, kind of an aggregate retail beef price of over $8, reaching a record there. But we're also seeing, a record ground beef price. It actually surpassed $6 per pound and hit $6.14 per pound in March. That's actually up 11%, over 60 cents per pound from last year. Right. So when we look at that ground beef price, obviously we're looking at the 90% lean and 50% lean price to kind of get our different mixes as far as the ground beef goes within the retail meat case there. And the bigger driver of that ground beef price has actually been that 90% lean beef price. It's actually been sitting around $3.80 per pound for a few weeks here. And we compare that to a year ago at this time, it was sitting at about $3.45 per pound. Now, 50% lean beef prices has been tracking a little bit above a year ago, about 110 to 120 per pound for several weeks now, but definitely a little bit tracking a little bit sideways there. But, as we're watching both of these prices, specifically on this ground beef side of things, as, we're seeing these 90s and leans track a little bit higher than they were a year ago, definitely signaling that this ground beef price will probably remain around $6 per pound here in the near term. And so watching that quite closely, because we haven't really been able to start to hit the peak grilling summer season here. A couple other things to note on the beef side. Rose hit $7.99 per pound in March. That's the second highest. That's only behind the $8 per pound mark record that was actually reached just last month in February. So compared to a year ago, that's actually up 8% or about 60 cents per pound from last year. Steaks were $11.92 per pound. That's an increase of 3% or about 39, 40 cents per pound from the same time last year. Now, looking on the pork side of things, retail pork prices hit $4.95 per pound in March. So we're near the same highs that were reached in September. We're reaching that $5 mark. And last time we kind of hit that $5 mark was September of 22, October of 2022, and October of 2023, when they actually reached just about $5 or just above $5 per pound. So definitely a stronger retail price there for the pork side of things. You know, and a lot of this increase in the retail pork prices is we're seeing higher bacon prices. They're actually just below that $7 mark. We're actually $6.98 per pound in March. That's actually an increase of almost 6% or about 37 cents per pound from last year. Also noteworthy in March, retail prices for chops and hams increased from last year about 2% and just under 1% respectively to $4.34 and $4.50 per pound.
He also admits there's concerns related to consumers.
So by and large, I mean, one of the bigger things we've been watching here and kind of watching these retail prices, just the overall potential impacts to just consumer demand for specifically meat in the retail case, in the meat case there. So we're kind of this larger concern on the retail price side of things. Would be inflationary pressures and how that will affect consumer demand. Now, on the meat demand side of things, we've seen consumers actively continue to purchase meat. That's definitely what we saw in 2024 and somewhat through the first quarter of 2025. But we see these prices move a little bit higher. So that looming concern regarding meat demand is if we're approaching that point where consumers will start to limit their meat consumption due to higher prices, and we start to then see some of those demand impacts on just overall demand for meat in the meat case.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
You've heard that we're doing these reconciliation budgets because that's a whole mechanism to be able to move something through the Senate where you only need 51 votes so it doesn't hit that 60-vote filibuster. That's the real reason we do this whole dance.
Arizona Representative David Schweikert, chairman of the Joint Economic Council.
But you remember how many people are so upset. David, you're going to cut spending. Over the next 10 years, this is the baseline money. Baseline. We're scheduled to spend $86 trillion over the next 10 years. And at best, the House resolution had $2 trillion of spending reductions and modernizations over 10 years. 86 is the baseline spending. We're talking about trying to trim $2 trillion out of the 86. And this causes people losing their minds. Have we lost our sanity in this country? You're telling me you can't find, that's what, 2.3%? Forgive my math, I'm trying to do it quickly. That's Armageddon? Does that give you a sense of just how addicted the bureaucracies, the society, the business models out there are to U.S. borrowing? And there was another thing that happened last week that really should have taken people's breath away. Now, this is sort of behind the paywall, so we caught other articles writing about it. Moody's Analytics, the people that sort of study what's going on in economics and business, put out a paper that in nine budget years, 30% of U.S. tax collections are going to go to just pay interest. So you pay your $100 in income taxes, 30 cents of it just went to interest. And this is before the Senate, or what we're trying to do in the budget reconciliation. Because remember, I'm going to show you the Senate document is completely unserious. It piles on stunning amounts of debt. But does this scare anyone? In nine budget years, 30% of your taxes you pay. But it's just cover interest. I mean, am I just an idiot for coming behind this mic every week and trying to show the math? And I get my brothers and sisters around here. That was interesting, David. I'm still going to vote for piling on more debt because, well, let's be honest, my voters want stuff. And I'll be out of here by the time this blows up. It probably doesn't blow up. What happens is you hit a moment where the money required to finance the debt like this, it consumes everything. You hit a moment. I showed a chart a month ago, that showed if we went back to a six handle, so 6% interest rate on U.S. sovereign debts, which we were right up against in, what, the mid, early 2000s, 2005, 2006, we went to a 6% interest rate, about 45%+ of all U.S. taxes went just to cover interest. If you go to 9%, It's the majority of U.S. taxes go just to cover interest. Part of that's because we're sitting on what, $29-30 trillion of publicly sold debt. So the actual debt is about 36.6 or something like that. We're in extraordinary measures, so the actual debt numbers are a little distorted right now because we're borrowing internally and we got to pay that all back. So watch interest rates pop when we finally raise the debt ceiling, and now we have to refund all that money back to the accounts plus the interest that they missed. But you start to think about, we have to refinance. And some of this gets refinanced 2 or 3, 4, or 5 times in a year because it's, you know, you're borrowing 30 days, 6 months. So we will refinance about $9 trillion, and we're going to issue about $2.2 trillion new debt. So tiny movements of interest rates are really stressful.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
It was a bit mixed.
Breaking down USDA's latest WASDE report, Guy Allen with the IGP Institute.
I think today we'll walk this, talk about wheat, then we'll move over to the feed grains, and then finish up with the oil seeds. Starting off with a bit of bearish news here. The numbers in the USDA report for wheat were a bit negative to the market, and it was down after the report. U.S. all wheat ending stocks were came in above what the trade average guess was, came in at 846 against a trade guess of 825 and near the upper limit of the range. Interesting enough, imports were increased by about 10 million bushels, exports lowered to 15 million compared to March. And so that's going to leave us with a little bit more in the tank at the end of the year. Some noted changes in the export complex. There is another 1 million metric ton reduction in Russia's expected exports. However, Russia's exports are down 11.5 million metric tons from a year ago. Had a little bit of an increase in the Ukrainian exports by 500,000 tons. But another thing weighing on the markets, China's imports were decreased by about 3 million metric tons to a 6-year low of 3.5 million metric tons. And that's a bit indicative of their larger production we're seeing over there. And we'll see that again, particularly in the corn situation, which is reducing China's need to import grain as they become increasingly self-sufficient on a number of those commodities on that. Well, moving over to the feed grains, just before we move to feed grains, one little note for wheat. We have seen an increase in world feeding of wheat. I think that's reflective of the low prices in a lot of the areas. So we are pricing wheat into the feed ration, which that sort of is the downside for the values of wheat when it gets cheap enough to substitute for corn. Well, moving on into the feed grains complex, corn, a bit of a different picture there. Corn numbers were a bit friendlier. We saw the market up 5 to 8 cents on the day on Thursday's close. Ending stocks were down about 75 million bushels to 1,465 billion. That's 45 million bushels less than what the trade average was. Exports were increased up 100 million bushels to 2.55 billion. Feed and while domestic U.S. feed and residual consumption was dropped by 25 million to 5.75 billion bushels. Somewhat in line with that report, and keep in mind this April report was adjusted according to our March 31st stocks report. They sort of tell us if the tank's half full or half empty, and it's sort of a reconciliation for our balance sheet for those numbers. Let's see, in the global market, numbers USDA for Argentina, Brazil, unchanged and steady. Earlier Thursday morning, Brazilian government organization CONAB raised Brazilian corn crop 2 million metric tons to 124.7 million metric tons. Other competitor exports were left unchanged in the April report. And China's corn import numbers were left unchanged at 8 million metric tons. And that 8 million metric tons is on the lower side of where we've been over the last 5 years for Chinese corn imports. That left our U.S. Corn stocks to use ratio, dropped it down from 10.2% to 9.6%. Which anytime I think you get those ending stocks below 10%, we're starting to run a bit critical there, which keeps me a bit optimistic for prices going forward through this summer. You know, any sort of a weather issue, we could see corn prices rally there. I think, though, that weather situation is going to be a bit secondary to the current discussions on tariffs and trade. That seems to be the big news in the market.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
A look at month-over-month changes in the U.S. soybean supply and demand ledger, post-USDA quarterly stocks report. This is World Agricultural Outlook Board Chair Mark Jankowski.
We raised soybean crush in the U.S., increased our forecast by 10 million bushels. We're just seeing a strong soybean meal domestic disappearance and also very strong soybean oil exports. So that is supporting those crush margins and leading to that increased domestic crush.
The bean import forecast was raised 5 million pounds.
Based on the pace with which those soybean imports are currently coming in, we have to boost that up a bit.
No change in the export forecast from the previous month resulted in a lowering of
ending stocks forecast by 5 million bushels.
Yet no change in the season-ending average price, still at $9.95 a bushel. I'm Rod Bain reporting in Washington, D.C.